Hello, and welcome, or welcome back, to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam Five, and thank you very much for listening. This is episode 16, and I'm going to say right now that this will be the first of two parts. Both this show and show 17, sometime next week or a little later, will both be in-depth discussions. In-depth series of questions and observations about virtual worlds and online role-playing games. There's no possible way I can cover all the points of interest connected with this and what I've been thinking about in just one show. Probably not even two shows. But there's a great deal to talk about just today. So, first, shout-outs and acknowledgments to friends of this podcast. First of all, a big thank you to Does My Geek Look Big in This for setting aside program time in their episode number 15 to play another one of those mini-dramas I like to do for podcasts that I enjoy. This was a full 7 minutes of their showtime, and it was very good of them and great fun to hear it played. Please check out all their shows, if you haven't yet, at www.doesmygeek.com, because you'll be glad you did. And that particular mini-drama will be available as a link in the schnotes for today's show. There'll be lots of links in the schnotes for today's show and probably next week's as well. Next up, a shout-out and a thank you to Fistful of Comics and Games for taking... I should explain here for a second. I created a mini-drama for them as well and offered it for their use if they could use it. The problem was I made two versions of it, a 6-minute version and a 15-minute version. I don't know what I was thinking. I'd lost my mind. I was having fun. I lost my mind. I went a little nuts, and I did a version that ran a full 15 minutes. Now, I sent both of them, and when I wrote them, I told them that the 15-minute version was just for the curious. I told them I knew it was of no use to their show, but what did they do? What did the masters of the inner circle gave it its own feed entry in their syndication list, in their RSS feed. They took the 15-minute mini-drama, actually ginormous drama, and treated it like a show in itself. How cool is that? So a massive thank you to Fistful of Comics and Games. Please check them out at fistfulofcomics.com. Also, a hello, a welcome, and a thank you to Mr. Mick Bradley of the House of the Harping Monkey, because he has joined the IDDFOS Frapper Map Superior. As of this recording, that brings my membership in the map up to 4. And we're quite happy with that. We're quite happy with it that way. After all, it's fitting that only the coolest people should be on that map. Only the elite. The creme de la creme. Only they belong to the IDDFOS Frapper Map, so that will do. No need to put your pin up there with the best of the best. No need to go to www.anim5.com. No need to click on that little yellow dummy. No need to scroll down to the IDDFOS page to find the big, bright, rectangular link to our Frapper Map. Just don't worry about it. Digger Story, Mr. T, Mr. Bradley, and myself will be just fine out there on the veranda, drinking Chateau Clément 71 and eating a fine, rich chocolate mousse. But I digress. Next up, a recommendation to check out the Dragon's Landing podcast if you haven't heard it already, particularly episode 49. I believe it's 49. Because aside from being a fun show to listen to, at the very end, our mighty friend, the Norwegian Viking, Mr. T, made use of his vocal characterization skills to produce their end credits. Way to go, Mr. T. And, of course, if you've been listening to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, you'll know that 2 weeks ago, Mr. T recommended MMORPGs as a topic for discussion. And since then, he's sent in MP3s and URLs directly related to that topic. Now, normally I would treat the audio and link information that I received from the Norwegian Viking as listener feedback, but I'm thinking that it's more actually a part of the main body of this episode. Partly because it deals directly with this show's subject, and because he prompted my recollections that I wanted to do a show on VR and MMOs, and partly because what he recorded and sent to me is absolute gold. He split the files into two parts. One is a superior role-play narrative, and the other brings up questions and offers some research that is absolutely worthy of our attention. So, the links he sent, which, by the way, will be in the show notes, all have to do with today's topic, and that is virtual worlds, massive multiplayer online role-playing games. Their appeal for some, their effect on our lives, the implications for the future of lifestyles and technologies, all that. So I'm going to say a big thank you to Mr. T and get into the show itself, including his material, as I go. And so, what better way to start off with than that first file that Mr. T sent? Please enjoy this fine bit of creativity.
Hi, Adam. This is Mr. T. I thought I'd start this subject for you. And if you're not doing multiplayer online games this week, you can always save it for next week. I thought I'd just start off with a story.
I took a wrong turn last night. The gnome at Lakeshire said there was a clear path to the surging gorge straight north of Redridge. He just forgot to mention the terrors I had to endure on my way there. The first thing I smelled was the sulfur. The gates to this land had been smashed long ago, probably in some ancient war. And the doors to hell stood wide open. But this wasn't hell. It was something far worse. The burning steps of the Blackrock Mountain. Oh yes, this place I've heard of. I noticed the cherry grog smell from the gnome's breath. But still, the innocent nature of their race gave me the illusion that the gnome couldn't be mean or evil. So even standing there at the Blackrock Pass, watching the ashes fall like snow, I summoned my horse and mounted. The magma had filled the rivers of this land, and it ran like blood from an open wound. The smell was worse than death, and I had smelled death from the ghastly tombs of Duskwood. The pillars of ash stood as a symbol of a fallen civilization. A single statue, standing over 20 feet high, was facing the mountain with his sword elevated, as if he was cursing it, damning it to hell. The sight was so brittle that I didn't even see the ogre before I felt the hard edge of its club. My horse disappeared like a wisp in the wind. I stood facing the horrid sight of a huge red-skinned ogre, looking at me as if I was pork with a side of bacon. I jumped left and right, trying to dodge the log-like club from crushing my skull. I lost my balance and found myself pounded at the floor. The ogre was ready to crush me. While it was down, I grabbed a handful of ash and threw it at his eyes, blinding him. I got up and sprinted away, fiddling away in my pocket after a lifesaver. I found it, a little glass ball filled with flash powder. To him, I vanished in midair like smoke from a bonfire. I found my horse about a mile up the road. I was way beyond the point of no return, so I just mounted and continued riding up the road. I could sense the Blackrock stronghold watching me with the eyes of 100 orcs. And these orcs were worse than a horde, so I was careful not to get caught. I started sensing something was wrong when a knight came riding by yelling something.
What the f*** are you doing here, noob? You're 10 levels off.
Now my name is Noob, so I didn't think he was talking to me. I ignored him and continued north. Suddenly, along the edges of the mountain ridge, I saw reptilian-like beings chanting something. The next thing I remember was a rain of fire from the sky. Even with the elf's blazing emblem, it still felt like acid to the skin. Luckily, my horse didn't fail me this time. I got away. But my sergeant cloak had seen better times. now full of holes from the licking fire. I leave that to Simon Tanner later. I reached the end of the line. The Altar of Storm was standing as a harsh reminder of the Burning Legion. Yet, there was no way past. The pass was nothing more than steep and sharp rock. I couldn't stand the humiliation of being tricked. I fell down to my knees in front of the statue, crying, "Why, you maniacs, why?" I knew I had no choice but to use the Heartstone, a magical stone given to me at birth. I tapped my shoes and repeated the incantation. "There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home." Lakeshire Inn was a sight for sore eyes.
"Everyone keeps talking about beer goggles. I can't find the plans for them anywhere."
But I couldn't say the same for the gnome still drinking in the corner.
Now the strange thing is, this is a true story. Well, sort of. It happened to me yesterday. This is, of course, the World of Warcraft, or the World of Azeroth.
The magma had filled the rivers of this land, and it ran like blood from an open wound. Can you get more vivid than that? That, ladies and gentlemen, in my opinion, was a narrative of superb role-play. The immersion of player into character, the physical and emotional reaction to the fantasy environment. And because World of Warcraft is a multiplayer public place, the inevitable intrusion of some other player not role-playing, and the humor that can accompany the danger. That was just a wonderful piece of work, and Blizzard Entertainment didn't write or produce that. A player did. One of the more positive emergent properties of the particular work of art called World of Warcraft. Mr. T, if you can produce stories like that every week or every other week, I'd heartily recommend beginning your own podcast. I would certainly subscribe to it. If anyone else agrees with me, and I'm sure there's got to be a ton of you out there that just listen to that, if you agree with me, write in. Please. Now, aside from being a great story to listen to, that audio also solved a problem for me because it creates a starting point for discussion. I had a hard time pinning down where to start when talking about MMOs because the fact that they're worlds, massive multiplayer online role-playing games are worlds, and they encompass everything. So it's like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall. Where do you start? How do you begin talking about that? But I think we can take a cue from the Norwegian and start talking about the role-playing game aspect of MMOs. And that'll be after a short break. Here are two podcast promos back-to-back. This episode won't be like last week. I seem to be using other podcast promo audio as punctuation rather than evenly spacing them out. I'm sorry about that. We'll have a better balance this week. But here are two shows. Here are two from shows that are favorites of mine and that I hope you'll check out and enjoy too. So there's no place like home. There's no place like home. Priceless. Back in a bit. Okay, and so, first little sticky point. We're just going to jump in and start, and we'll get into some more of the philosophical aspects and the definitions of MMOs in a bit, but we're just going to jump in and start with the role-playing game aspect of it. Here's another thing that I want people to write in about, and let me know your opinion. My opinion has been that role-playing game, this is what I think a role-playing game is. A role-playing game is one in which you can play a character and become immersed in that character and the world that character is supposedly moving around in. You don't talk like you. You don't talk like Joe Schmagegi. You don't talk like Jane Jehoshaphat, you talk like your character. You say what your character would say. You behave in the way your character would behave. And there's nothing in particular in the world that's going to jarringly knock you out of that persona just by virtue of the fact that either it's a gross anachronism or just doesn't fit at all. And you won't find something like that in a real role-playing game, particularly, of course, the tabletop variety where everybody gets together for exactly that purpose. So I've always had, and this is not something that's easily done online in a public place with lots of different people logging into the same world and location, total strangers, where they let anybody in that has the money to pay for the subscription. It's very difficult to do. And so every time I've seen in a game, and even in a game that's not an MMO, even in a game that's out-of-the-box single-player, this is your adventure, they will label it an RPG, and it's been this way for quite a while. It's kind of muddied the waters as far as the definition goes. They'll label it an RPG simply because of the fact that you can either choose to play a knight, a magic user, a different race, a different type of character, simply because you can change the look or the alignment of your character. They'll label it an RPG, and to me that's inaccurate. And unfortunately, even though it's ideally suited to role-playing games, to the best that a digital world can be, to the best that a finite, giant set of scenery with an enclosed map, to the best that it can be, an MMO is suited to role-playing, it doesn't happen. At least not on the scale that you would hope it would if you're going to call the game a role-playing game. And there was the absolute perfect example of that was stuck right there in the middle of that audio story. There was a compelling drama going on, a personal experience of high danger and adventure being interrupted by some schmonick who is only in there for who knows what reason, certainly not to portray a character. Pardon me if there's a tinge of contempt in my voice. I really shouldn't get that way about it because people will entertain themselves in whatever way they choose, and it's not for me to judge how they play their games. It really isn't. And there are far, far worse things that some people could be doing than logging on to World of Warcraft. There are worse things that they can be doing with their time, but that was an example. The fellow that came riding along on the horse and was WTF. Noob, you're 10 points out of your range. You're 10 points off. Essentially, there's people in the game that are in there not to play somebody else. The role-playing aspect of it is absent. It's very difficult. I mean, you can find people in there that are willing to do it and actually are interested in doing it, but it's very difficult. And in some cases, even myself, when I go in, the role-play aspect of it, mainly because I've given up on it and I'm just playing it like an out-of-the-box game. There's a point where a really weird thing happens. I'll give you an example. And you don't have to have played World of Warcraft. It could be any MMO that you've been involved with. Let's say, and I'll use this as an example, I've got a dwarf character. I walk that dwarf character into Stormwind and find the arrow shop, because I want to stock up on those jagged arrows that do the super heavy damage. But I've picked up some armor and a few pieces here and there, and I'm standing there in the shop. I walk into the shop. Shopkeeper greets me and says, "I buy only the finest goods," whatever. Says something completely, the NPC behind the counter says something completely in character. And I'm standing there and I'm calculating the armor bonus, the statistical improvements to my agility, to my strength, to my spirit, to my attack power, switching off boots, switching off helmet, switching off chest armor, because I'm going to sell one of the pieces or two of the pieces to this guy. And I'm standing there number crunching, until I finally come up with the right balance and ratio of the specific sets of numbers that are going to be best for my character. And once I've gotten all those calculations out of the way, then I sell the armor to the NPC, buy the arrows, walk out the door. And I walk out the door, and he says, "Go with honor, friend." And it strikes me that in that little encounter, I was the computer, and my PC was role-playing. And I think that pervades probably 80 to 90% of the rest of the players in the rest of the MMOs that are going on today. You don't get the kind of immersion, you don't get the kind of creativity or mood or just the descriptive genius that was in that particular audio story that we just heard from the Norwegian Viking. You don't get that mindset in most of the players when you could. If it were possible, if it were as popular to role play within these games, depending on who you find, as it should be, if it were as popular to role play in these games as it should be, I think they'd be way more popular. As if they're not popular enough. 6.5 million people worldwide playing just World of Warcraft. These games have an intense appeal. But I think it'd be great just to be able to go to certain areas in some of these games or find it throughout that you could sit down in any inn and tell the kind of story that we just heard a little while ago and have it commented on and have other stories exchanged just sitting in an inn drinking the ales. And I've done this twice. I've gone with small little groups of people that happen to meet up to go and sit at the inn to tell the stories, and they just can't. I think they'd like to, but they can't. And it's scary. Now, obviously, I'm sure some of them can't because they're 11, or some of them can't because they're just not used to it. It's still brand new to them, but they'd like to. Some of them can very, very well. A very few of them. And some of those very few are 11. It's very difficult to nail people down in this game. But the role play aspect of them, the RPG in massive multiplayer online role playing game, to me is, for the most part, a misnomer. And if you disagree with me about this, please send an audio, write in and tell me. Audio is very easy to do. I don't know if you've seen it yet. If you go to the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space webpage, which you can get to through www.animflag.com, if you look at the top of that webpage, you'll see a series of little icons on the right, on your right, and one of them is that pink button. Just click that button. It'll take you right to a page where there's nothing simpler than filling in your name, your email address, and I don't sell email addresses. I don't do that. And I'm not going to do that. But you fill that in and you click a little button that says, can we go ahead and take audio from your mic? And you click it. Talk. If you don't like it, you can start again. Listen to it. If you don't like it, start again. When you finally like it, just hit send. You're done. And it gets played on this show. So yeah, let me know. What do you think? Online role-playing games. Are they role-playing games? They certainly don't compare. Well, it's kind of tough to compare them to tabletop role-playing games. It's very tough, actually, because they have a few things in common. There are some aspects of them that are maybe better, maybe worse. In a tabletop role-playing game, you get four or five people together, maybe more, that sit down to create the characters, create the world, and just go into it with a set of rules that's supposed to be the framework of the game, that's supposed to be the set of parameters that you're allowed to operate within. And the interpretation of those rules is not as rigid and unflexible and dipped in stone as the ones that you'll find in an MMO. When you're online, it's all automated. There isn't even a question about the rules. There isn't a question about the rolls. There's no fudging dice. There's no giving little hints, warnings, story direction, steering to the players. There's your avatar, your character, right there, swinging the sword. It either hits or it misses. And the monster is either too big for you or not. Of course, the difference is your character in a tabletop RPG gets killed, it gets killed. Particularly in a situation where you're playing a game where resurrection is not possible. It gets killed. You have to create a new character. Of course, in an MMO, in most MMOs, so far as I know, it would make no sense whatsoever to the company to have your character die when it gets killed. Because you would just get fed up, frustrated, and stop paying your money every month. You'd cancel your account. So death in an MMO is quite different. The other aspect of the MMOs as compared to tabletop RPGs is the fact that, they're finite. There's nothing left to the imagination because it's all there for you. It's all been put out. It's gorgeous as hell, but it's all been put out there for you. The other aspect of it is you don't have the freedom. It gives you the illusion of having the freedom of movement. I mean, the continents, at least in World of Warcraft, between the two continents that you can move around in, you certainly have the illusion that you can go vast distances through all kinds of territories and areas and roads. The variation in terrain is astounding. You've got snow-covered mountains, you've got swamps, you've got deserts, you've got jungles, you've got fantasy, ethereal, elven forests, ocean shorelines. It's gorgeous, it's astounding, and it is massive, but it's finite. And there's nothing you particularly can do to change anything in there. Aside from the living or dead status of any particular monster or human that you attack. In a tabletop RPG where you're there together with your friends and the GM, you have, within the parameters of, again, of the rules and the story, you have absolute freedom to do anything, to move to any location, to change anything in your environment. When you go to an NPC, it doesn't have a flat, static set of lines that it can say to you and nothing else. You can actually, in a tabletop RPG, you can actually interact with the NPC and it will behave and react according to what you say to him or her or it. You won't get that in an MMO. It's arguably, and I think it's self-evident that the world and characters created in a tabletop RPG with pen and paper and dice players getting together, that world is far, far more vast and mutable, flexible, pliable, changeable than a digital online massive multiplayer. That's just given. Do you disagree? Write in. Tell me, what do you think? Should we even bother comparing the two? Because the only thing that they really have in common are the random element, the fact that most tabletop games, if they don't have to do with strategy and warfare, have to do either with science fiction or fantasy in some way, shape, or form. And you've got characters that you have certain character types that are prevalent and common to both. We're going to back away a little bit. Let's back away a little bit from the role-playing game aspect of it, and we'll get into a little bit more of the definition, a little bit more of some of the philosophy behind virtual reality and MMOs. But first, I'm going to play two more podcast promos, and I'll be back in a bit. Okay, now I mentioned earlier that one of the more difficult parts about discussing virtual reality and massive multiplayer online games is that it is deciding where to start. Where do you begin talking about them? It's almost as difficult as trying to nail down a definition of art. I don't know whether you caught the Game of the Podcasting episode where they were discussing the question, is live-action role-playing art? You should check that out, too. But the virtual reality MMO games, what about them? How do you begin talking about them? It's difficult to pick a starting point because they all have aspects of everything. They are worlds. They're worlds missing three senses. That's all they are. They're worlds missing. You've got sight, sound, taste, touch, and smell. Almost missed the last one. You've got sight and sound in these worlds. Essentially, when you've logged on and your character is standing there, in the best of them anyway, you can change the camera angle. You can either put yourself in absolute first person where you see out of the avatar's eyes, or you can back away from the avatar, the digital representation of who you are, and look at it from different angles as it moves around and acts in the world. And your monitor is essentially turned into a point of view. The display on your monitor becomes your point of view within that world, within that three-dimensional environment that you can move around in. And of course, you've got the sound. Anything that makes a sound within the world, you pick up in stereo, right and left. I mean, one of the things I found most impressive, I'm easily impressed. I mean, I remember table tennis as a new and interesting thing to do back in the 70s, online TV playing paddle pong. But yeah, I'm easily impressed. I walked past a torch when I first started playing the game, and I'd play it with headphones on. I was astounded because I walked past it and the sound of the torch burning moved past me in stereo on my right. And of course the screams of the monsters and the dialogue that characters, those speaking non-player character cartoon beings in this world as they're talking to you. You get audio, you get sight. You're just missing the other three senses. But for all intents and purposes, it is a world. Here's something to write in about if you've got a definition. What is an MMORPG? Define it. I mean, that's what we're essentially doing here right now. We're stepping back to define it. At some point, I don't know whether it's going to be later on in this episode or we're going to save it for number 17, because this is going to be two full episodes of IDDFOS. The second file that Mr. T sent, because it brings up some fascinating research and some questions, which, as I said, are very worthy of our attention, and they spotlight specifically on the social aspects, the real-world aspects of playing this type of game, playing these types of games, and I don't know whether we're going to have time this episode to get into it. If we do, great. If not, we're going to play that in the next episode. I never know how these are going to time out. But write in with your definition of what an MMO is. What do you think it is? What can you call it? It's a miraculous thing. To me, it's a miraculous thing. I can't just call them games. I can't do it. I can't just call them, it's just a game. I mean, they're certainly games. They certainly are that. But I can also call them, devices, incredibly complex devices, because they have more theoretical moving parts than a couple of hundred automobile assembly lines. I can call them programs. Although if you call something like that a program, it's a program. It seems to trivialize the effect that they have on the user. And it weakens the really compelling questions that they raise. And besides, if you just want a computer program, you bring in a computer programmer. If you want an online gaming world, if you want an online role-playing game, which I'm calling because it's become the generic title for it, I've just contradicted myself. If you want an online RPG, if you want a world that people can run around in, that they're willing to pay $15 a month to belong to, then you call in a computer programmer. Actually, you call in an army of computer programmers, along with writers, actors, designers, painters. amusement park planners, architects, historians, strategists, musical score composers, animators, networking hardware specialists, mathematical logistics specialists, economy theoreticians, costume designers, audio engineers, publishers, and all the rest of the skilled people necessary that I haven't thought of. Can you call these game worlds art? I think a better question would be, how can you not call them art? And speaking of, I've got to stop for a second. Speaking of musical score composers, now my musical tastes lean toward the classical. I can't help it. That's just who I am. But even if your musical taste doesn't lean toward the classical, just in terms of the cinematic and epic nature of World of Warcraft specifically, the musical score, the musical background, the accompaniment to this game is absolutely gorgeous. It's just beautiful. And it's timed to make you feel as if you are part of an epic story. And you hear the plinky little mandolin or dulcimer music occasionally that plays in some of the inns as you walk into an inn to sell your little eggs or your scraps of leather or whatever and pick up a healing potion or something. And then you walk out. It's timed. A little time goes by, a little bit of wind blows for a while in silence, and you start down the road, and then the score kicks in. The musical score kicks in. It's essentially helping you become immersed in the world by becoming the musical background to your adventure, and the mood it sets is just astounding. The attention to detail that these people put into these games is astounding. I changed that point of view camera to take a look at my character as it was walking along, and since it was in the high mountains, in the snow-covered mountains, and it was a cold place, you could see the breath coming out of the front of the avatar. I mean, they make all the avatars appear to breathe. If you get close enough to them and you just watch them, they appear to breathe. Some of them appear to have asthma. But that's just an animation thing. But anyway, I just wanted to... I'm sorry, I got off on the tangent of musical scores and details. But yeah, these things are art. They are living, breathing works of art that you walk into. I keep referring to the one MMO that I'm most familiar with. It's the one that I'm playing. I played two and become heavily involved in both. But the one that I'm currently in is the big kid on the block, that World of Warcraft. If I'm offending anyone with game loyalties to Guild Wars, EVE Online, EQ2, D&D Online, Star Wars Galaxies, Dark Age of Camelot, any of the other setups, sorry. But we'll continue. So, yeah. An online world is a melding together of dozens of disciplines, dozens of different types of skill sets, from theatrical scene painting to composing to statistical mathematics. And when it all comes together and works, we get a kind of a double payoff. This could be, if we want to make a list of the appeals of these games, particularly with, I guess I have to say it, the geek culture, we get a double payoff. And I'm gonna paraphrase an idea here that I heard about 16 years ago when I was watching an instructional video that I had picked up on how to use Deluxe Paint 4 for the Amiga. Anyway, in the video, one of the artists said, and if anybody knows who this was, go ahead and write in. I'll be impressed because I have no idea who it was. But the artist said that one of the appeals of creating art with a computer is that it gratifies both the right brain and the left brain. Your left brain gets the stimulus of the mathematical and technical parameters that you're working with, while the right brain gets to enjoy the color, the design, the form, and the aesthetics of what you're producing. I think appreciating an art form that's as technologically dependent as an MMO, I believe that must have the same effect, at least to a certain extent. Now, the only other art form that I'm familiar with that brings together this many disciplines, at least in the creative process, is theater. Big surprise there. But truly, any serious study or involvement with theater production, it shows you the same kind of synthesis. It's argued that theater steals from everything. New technology, literature, art styles, politics, it all comes together in theatrical productions. And over the past couple of decades, computer programming as well. If you've got a well-equipped theater, you'll find that lighting cues and sound cues are often set up and run on Macs or PCs. But the big difference is the theatrical event of an MMO online. That event, that theater, that piece of theater is entirely electric. It spans the globe as far as an internet signal can reach. It's available 24/7, and it's a work of art that invites the audience to be a part of it. Talk about all the world's a stage, you bet. when you create and name that World of Warcraft character, or that any character, in whatever MMO you're playing, you've added a new cast member to the show, and you put on the costume, and you join the show. And no matter which game it is, it's a show with a very open-ended plot. The narrative framework of the action is usually more about the history of what went before. In game parlance, that would be referred to as the lore. And there aren't so much lines of dialogue as a repeated series of catchphrases by the NPCs, but you add to that your ad-libs. It's a universal medieval fantasy. World of Warcraft is a fantasy night at the Improv, but it's a show. Nonetheless, it's a show. It can be a very disturbing show, depending on what appeals to you and who you are. Let's take a moment to actually just step back and look at the process of becoming a part of one of these games. Let's examine the surface features of an average online gameplay process. Average. We're not talking the 18 hours a day stuff. We're talking just average. So let's just say, here's the scenario. You've worked all day, or you spent the whole day working in school. You're doing a bunch of dumb, repetitive tasks that make you tired, but you're working to get that paycheck or that diploma. So you get home, you maybe sit for a while, you flip on the news, and you see killing and political factions fighting and blood and racism, and you shake your head and you try to keep from getting depressed. You grab a cup of coffee or maybe a cold drink, and you switch on the machine. Maybe you check out eBay real quick, see what's selling and how much. You check your email. But enough already, it's time to relax. Jump in, get away from it all, and enjoy your favorite game. So you log in, the world loads up, your character appears, and once it does, you perform a bunch of dumb repetitive tasks. But you're working to get that gold or that reputation. And you spend the night attacking and killing and fighting with bloody weapons or lethal spells. You're surrounded by violent creatures because you've gone looking for them. And you're running around in a world with clashing political factions and warring races. And maybe after you've slaughtered enough furl bogs, you check out the auction house to see what's selling and for how much. So, okay, there's the cute obligatory parallels between the game world and the real world. But it's not something that should be surprising. It's done in every other creative medium, from books to paintings to television. Art imitates life. I'd like to read you a short paragraph from one of my favorite authors, Terry Pratchett. I quote him a lot. I'm sorry, but he's been pigeonholed as just a comedy writer when in fact he's brilliant. Now, given there are countless parallels between immersive world games and theater, I think this is very appropriate to the topic. This is from one of his earlier novels called Weird Sisters, W-Y-R-D, Sisters. And if you don't know anything about Pratchett, if you haven't read any of the books, one of the major figures in all of them is the archetype of death. He makes use of the classic skeleton with the hooded cloak and the scythe. But Pratchett portrays him as a character of innocent and most often noble actions. And he's made him a good guy, essentially. A very good guy, one of the heroes of the series. but he's given him a curiosity about the living that helps Pratchett get his point across to the reader. Because through death, he makes his observations. Death makes observations. One of the observations in the novel Weird Sisters is a real gem. That's one of the reasons why I enjoy his work so much. The context for this quote is that death has come for a character and has arrived near the time and place of his appointment, but it's backstage during the production of a play. And so death has his first encounter with the practice and concept of theater. And here's the quote. His eyeless skull took in the line of costumes, the waxy debris of the makeup table. His empty nostrils snuffed up the mixed smells of mothballs, grease, and sweat. There was something here, he thought, that nearly belonged to the gods. Humans had built a world inside the world, which reflected it in pretty much the same way as a drop of water reflects the landscape. And yet, inside this little world, they had taken pains to put all the things you might think they would want to escape from, hatred, fear, tyranny, and so forth. Death was intrigued. They thought they wanted to be taken out of themselves, and every art humans dreamt up took them further in. Amazing quote. So why, if we want to call an MMORPG a brilliant artistic game, why would it have 99% of itself geared towards blood, violence, and death? War and combat. The term PvP, in case you're unfamiliar with it, and believe it or not, some people listening to this show might not be, because while 6.5 million people are playing World of Warcraft, and there's a whole bunch more playing all the other MMOs, lots and lots and lots of other people have no interest in it whatsoever. So PvP, in case you haven't heard the term, stands for player versus player, as if there isn't enough competition in the real world without the computer on at all. So why would it have so much of itself devoted to violence? And I'm guessing, at least a part of that answer, I'm guessing, is also a result of the direct link between online role-playing games and theater, between MMOs and theater. Now I'm going to post in the show notes a link to the Wikipedia definition of the word catharsis. It's likely that you're fully aware of the definition, but the definition listed there covers more aspects of it than I was ever aware of, including extensions of its meaning to include purification not only through emotion, but also through blood rituals. And if you go ahead and check out that link, or just type in catharsis and look for it in Wikipedia, check that out, read it. It's absolutely fascinating, and it ties in pretty closely to perhaps to the answer of not only the appeal of some of these games, but why they are so pervasively violent. Now, I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I don't believe that most of the 6.5 million people playing World of Warcraft, I don't believe that most of them have an intense desire to go out into the real world and start swinging a sword or an axe at real people. I mean, not seriously and all the time. If they do, then it doesn't matter what they're playing. It doesn't matter whether they're reading comic books or watching television or building sculptures out of wet cereal. It doesn't matter what they're doing. There's a problem there. But I don't believe most people want to do that 24/7, would seriously pick up a weapon and just go after people. It doesn't seem likely at all to me that myself or my wife would, no matter how bad traffic gets, I really don't think that either one of us is going to go on a murderous rampage with axes and daggers. But I really wonder how effective a world like World of Warcraft, or Azeroth as it's called, as Mr. T pointed out, I wonder how effective it is at being a kind of a play violence cathartic safety valve, a kind of a drain-off for some of those little murderous inclinations that most people actually do have, or do build up a little bit when dealing with real life, when hearing about the reported abominations of politicians, or widely sold defective products, or the division of motor vehicles. I think the division of motor vehicles wins out for me. Anyway, I would certainly want to go and pick up a weapon and start whacking dinosaurs to pieces after leaving the DMV. And I'll take this just a little bit further. I don't know how to classify this. I don't know how to describe it or what to call it, but maybe you there listening can write in and help me out. It's the appeal of the weapon. I'm not positive if this is universal or if it's a male-dominant characteristic. I really don't know, but there seems to be an underlying appeal and attractiveness of weapons to some people, particularly swords, daggers, morning stars. And I'd really like to hear more about this, please. Just a quick note or an audio about it. But when I look at some of the catalogs we get at work from prop manufacturers and the like, some of them are for stage weaponry. And I'm not going to give links to those places because some of the stuff that they sell is extremely dangerous. And it could easily get you killed just through accidental handling. And besides, if you're not making or selling the swords yourself, then you know the sources already anyway. But I could look into this catalog and I could see some really sleek fantasy dagger or a beautiful sword or a replica firearm of a .44 automag, and some little kid inside my head just smiles wickedly and says, "Cool." Now, there's the obvious phallic substitute psychology behind weapons, from the sword to the missile, but I'm talking about the little primal ape inside me, like that one from show 15. This little monkey that sees this shiny, sharp, jagged, heavy boss blade and wants to wield it against some unknown enemy like a big, dangerous hero, or sees that sleek, dangerous-looking automatic, like, "Ooh, if I had that Walther PPK, I'd be feared. I'd be the one to be reckoned with. I wouldn't be afraid." But it's particular with swords. It's particular with axes, daggers, and swords. And these catalogs certainly describe, as much as they can, the history connected with the weapon they're selling, or the story, the fantasy story, with the movie tie-in weapon that they're selling. They leave out the blood. They always leave out the blood. Now, there's a documentary series on DVD called Connections with James Burke. Some of you may remember it. It was pretty popular about 10 years ago because they were repeating all of them. And it's not Connections 2, it's the original Connections from 1978. Even if you've never heard of it, it's worth owning. It'll never become obsolete because it deals with the history of invention and science. But anyway, in one episode dealing with medieval warfare, Burke takes a long sword and starts swinging it at a side of beef hanging from a tree. And the camera closes in on each impact and slice. And as you watch it, and if you just substitute yourself or your enemy for that side of beef, it is absolutely horrifying. And it gives you pause. It gives me pause anyway. Think about how tough it is sometimes just to get out a really bad splinter. Or think about how the hairs on the back of your legs stand up when you have to hear about some particularly gruesome foot or hand wound from a knife or a piece of glass, how many stitches, etc. And yet, these replica blades sell very well. Their purpose is now to act as ornaments, little deadly works of art. Hopefully, for most collectors, it doesn't add to the appeal of these weapons to dwell on just how horrific a wound was inflicted by these things, and just how long it took the victim to bleed to death in agony. So, does that little internal bloodthirsty ape, or should we say the reptile brain, does that have a hand in how addictive or cathartic MMOs are? Because there we are in Azeroth. We're charging with glee at the Stegosaurus and swinging that blade or casting that explosive body-smashing spell or shooting a gun or a bow at the Bloodsail Buccaneer, digitally killing them. Clean. Swift. Over in seconds, and the body disappears. You don't stand over a victim. You don't stand over the fallen creature or human that you just stabbed through or hacked with your axe or sword, lying there as a result of your violence. You don't stand there listening to the shrieks of prolonged agony. He or she isn't laying there and retching blood onto your boots and gripping at your shin guard, staring accusingly up into your deadly killer eyes, pleading, "Why? Why?" What the hell was that about? No, the impression, though, that when you're in these games, the impression is when you're killing creatures or people in World of Warcraft, and I imagine every other MMO, is that it's clean. It's justified pretend killing with no real-world complications. And supposedly, this is my opinion again, supposedly the amount of satisfaction that you get from defeating a big, hairy monster is likely to be in direct proportion to your suspension of disbelief, coupled with the level of real-world frustrations that you carry into the game. And the more immersed in the environment you become with your character, the more exciting it is to risk yourself, and in most of these games, it's not much of a risk, even if you do get killed. It becomes more exciting to risk your character, I shouldn't say yourself, when you're going up against any of these creatures, when you're going to go ahead and take on the Dragonkin and the Swamp of Sorrows. So is part of the appeal of online gaming in general, is part of the appeal that process of slipping out of your world where the hard realities and choices don't allow you to behave like a killing machine into a world that not only allows it but expects you to be a killing machine, rewards you for violence? And there's also some folks that find that, and I hope there are a lot of them, I should be ashamed to say this, but I really do hope there are a lot of this type of person. But there's some folks that find the whole idea behind a game that starts you off killing and sends you off again and again and again and again to kill, 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 totally, find that totally repulsive and emotionally upsetting. A good friend of mine, long ago, probably towards the early beginnings of video games in general, a friend of mine, he was playing some type of combat adventure video game. I don't remember which one, but he was trying to get his girlfriend interested in playing it too. And she didn't have a problem with the whole video game aspect. She didn't have a problem with PC games or video games or anything like that. She wasn't disdainful of that. Her difficulty was that she had too willing a suspension of disbelief. She not only didn't want her character to get hurt, she didn't want to hurt any of the monster creatures in the game either. This is a very peaceful and non-combatant type of individual, wonderful young woman. So a game like World of Warcraft would be an absolute horror to her. And I wonder if it might not expand the gaming possibilities or even the market share. And I'm sure this study's been done already, so it may be a moot question, but I wonder. And here's another question for anybody that cares to write in as a response, or audio. I wonder if there would be more people out there willing to play the game if there were ways to make your character stronger, level up, and able to have newer, stronger abilities, special armors, by choosing a path that is totally non-blood spilling, totally non-violent. In other words, a series of medicine-making, herb-gathering quests, along with courier quests using scrolls and books, and then some life-saving quests where you need to save the owl beast babies or something, and healing quests where entire villages become cured of something because of your actions. Higher-level quests that require diplomatic visits to boss characters, etc. Just some way of becoming a powerful and respected character of wisdom and healing with unique abilities and unique clothing, maybe with incredible reputations for all factions, both sides. but make that possible without getting on the blood bandwagon. How do you suppose that could work? And would there be players out there willing to give it a try? Because certainly as it stands now, most MMOs, not just World of Warcraft, but most MMOs are certainly not absolute pacifist entertainment. That's going to conclude this particular episode of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. As I said, this will be part one of two. Episode 17 is going to be the part two. It's going to cover the same subject. We're going to go into the rest of it, and we are going to play in episode 17 next week the second sound file that Mr. T sent in, and that will kick us off, along with his very first email from weeks ago, that will kick us off on continued discussion and examination of massive multiplayer online role-playing games. Not to mention whatever audios or emails get sent in from you. Why not? It doesn't hurt. Just write in and include your two cents. Because quite obviously we didn't cover any of the questions that Mr. T asked in his first email. And some of the questions and observations that he has made in his second audio will be a perfect way to start off the next show. So let's have one small bit of music to close out this episode. Afterwards, I'll say my goodbyes, and there we are. Here's some music. So, we are ready to close up shop here. I'm going to simply thank you very, very much for listening to episode 16. I hope it raised some questions. If you've never played an MMO, and maybe were remotely interested in it, maybe you want to give them a try. It's not for everybody. Some people think they're totally dumb. Sometimes people that are playing them think they're totally dumb. But I hope it shed a little light on the subject, or at least got people to start thinking about it, and that'll be it. Thank you once again for listening. Come back for episode 17, where we'll discuss the rest of the topic. And of course, once we're done doing that, I will explain why this series of podcasts is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes well with you, and best of days.